Welcome to Island Watch. Each week, we'll explore an island by watching a TV show or a movie. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale. Hi, I'm Gemma Voss.
And I'm Dave Zark. Welcome to Island Watch, the podcast that virtually visits islands all over the world.
And this week, we're visiting Kiribati. I knew I would blow that. Yeah, that's years of habit talking. This is important. Even though it's spelled K-I-R-I-B-A-T-I, it's not pronounced Kiribati. It's pronounced Kiribati. And so we're visiting Kiribati.
And the show we're using to get there is a documentary called Kiribati, A Drowning Paradise in the South Pacific. It's made by DW, that's Deutsche Welle, the German public broadcaster.
The documentary is in English and, great news, it's on YouTube, so it couldn't be easier to find. All aboard as we set sail for this week's adventure.
Kiribati is, in some ways, the center of the world. It's the only country on Earth that is part of all four hemispheres. It's 33 atolls spread over more than 3,000 kilometers around the equator.
That is a very cool fact. The only country on Earth that's in all four hemispheres. I've never really thought of a place being the center of the Earth before, but also, when it came to this episode, I realized I don't know the difference between an island and an atoll. So I had to look it up. I'm no geologist, so I'm not doing a deep dive on this, just the broad strokes. Generally speaking, an atoll is a reef made of coral, and it's usually in a ring shape. And the water the atoll surrounds is called a lagoon. So that cleared up a couple of things for me. Another very cool thing about atolls, they're in a ring shape because sometimes the coral grows and forms on the rim of an extinct volcano, which is so cool. In order for that formation to survive, the erosion or the subsidence has to be slow enough for the coral to outreach and outgrow any loss in height. And then, well, islands are just simply defined as a piece of land smaller than a continent totally surrounded by water, but they're not made out of coral.
Atolls or islands, nonetheless, we love to visit them. Here's an interesting thought, though. You know how we all want 2020 to be over? Well, Kiribati will be the first country in the world to move into the new year, just like every year. And even though the country is thousands of kilometers long, so to speak, all the islands share the same time zone. So happy new year, Kiribati. And here's hoping 2021 brings more attention and resources to help you address all the climate challenges you're facing.
Yeah, that would be great news for the people of Kiribati. You know, these atolls, I think there's something like 33 of them all together. Every one of them looks like a postcard. I mean, when you picture an island paradise, this is probably what you're seeing in your mind's eye. And unfortunately at this point, and the reason we wanted to watch this documentary, is that it's got the lowest elevation of any country in the world.
And the Maldives in the Indian Ocean is another island country in a very similar situation.
Right, they're both facing rising ocean levels. Yeah, and that's where this documentary comes in. It talks about the threat that these and other islands and their people are facing from climate change.
So this week we're watching Kiribati, A Drowning Paradise in the South Pacific. And the title says it all.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times we warn you about spoilers, but this time we can't help it because it's right in the title. Climate change really has been the elephant, you could say in the room, on the island during this podcast, because islands are the lands most at threat of climate change. And even knowing that, this documentary really opened my eyes. One of the shots in the film is of a house in a beautiful lagoon. I mean, it's surrounded by a lagoon. And to my un-island eyes, I thought, oh, wow, look, a house in a beautiful lagoon. But then as I watched, I realized what the implications of that were. And that is that the island has literally receded and been flooded around that house until it's literally the only thing and the little piece of land it's on left standing. And that's because the people have built up a makeshift seawall out of coral. They're basically living on a salt flat. So it is not what it appears. So there's a lot of beautiful photography in this documentary, but it's definitely reinterpreted in a different way than anything we've watched so far. It's kind of the counterpoint to something fantastical like Moana, where even though in Moana there's also environmental degradation happening, it's going to be a happy ending. And with Kiribati and other islands, it's not as clear. So that's through my own island eyes. But let's hear from people who actually live there, how they see things. They're not seeing a house in a beautiful lagoon. They're seeing their farm disappear from around them.
I've heard that other countries are causing climate change, but I don't hate those people. I see it differently. The Western countries are doing many things to cause climate change. They're to blame. All I can do is ask them to stop.
That is a heartbreaking exchange because they can do everything they can on the island, but really what is affecting them is mostly caused by people in other countries.
But they are taking some steps to try to mitigate the situation, for example, by planting mangroves along the beaches, trying to create a living barrier to prevent soil erosion and to minimize the damage from storm surge flooding.
The future prospects for Kiribati's young people are dire, but none of them want to leave their home.
I'm so proud to be a Kiribati, even though what we face with. He's still proud of our country.
This is where we belong. It's our culture, our identity. That's why I think this is where our hearts belong.
This is one of the callbacks to Moana in a way, you know, when the song at the beginning, when they're talking about that's where you are, it's your island, it's your home. And it's a recurring theme in this documentary as well. It was really interesting to me to hear how different people thought about their culture and identity and how if they leave, they will carry it with them. That was the opinion of some people. Other people said, you know, if we lose the island, we lose our culture. And I think by extension, we lose ourselves.
The main thing that is threatening us is the sea level rise. We have land erosion. The sea is taking most of the lands, and people here try whatever they have to build seawalls. But it doesn't help. When the water comes, no one can stop the water. It just comes and then take away all the lands again.
I was really shocked, I guess, to hear that environmental activist talk about it that plainly. But then again, this is not some theoretical circumstance. They are literally watching the beaches and the rest of the island wash away before their eyes. Their government has already purchased land in Fiji that at least some of the people will be able to move to when, not if, but when they lose their land. So yeah, she's taking it seriously. And yeah, she knows that the steps they're taking, like planting mangroves, that's just a stopgap measure. That's not a solution.
And the threat can be even more immediate. On Abayang, a coral atoll with a population of close to 6,000 people, families have been leaving because of rising salinity, which makes the soil infertile. And the salinity is happening because flooding happens almost every day.
Yeah, and the flooding every day, you know, where we live, often when the snow and the ice melt and spring, low-lying areas get flooded. But, you know, at best, that's a once-a-year type thing. And you're going to get water in your basement, and it's not a fun experience to go through by any means. I'm not trying to lessen the impact that the climate change is having here as well. But to have your land flood every day, your well flood every day, it's almost unimaginable. There's this scene where there's a young man standing on what looks like a salt flat, And he's talking about the changes he's seen to his village and his family lands just in the last 20 years. Like, we're not talking a huge amount of time, just 20 years.
Before, I don't care about climate change. When I heard about climate change, and oh, it's nothing. But now, I see the difference, you know, the impact, and it's like worrying me. And I know I'm thinking, maybe I'm gonna move, migrate to another Australia or New Zealand, another country, because the sea rising level is increasing. I have two kids, and then when I look for the kids, then maybe I should move.
But Kaboa wants to stay. It's not a question of courage. He just feels connected to his home.
We are from Kiribati. We are proud to be Kiribati. We want to die here. We don't want to go to overseas. We want to stay here. When we move, our culture will be disappear.
So the documentary covers a lot of different aspects of the culture of the people on Kiribati. And one of them is food. Well, it's a topic that gets most people pretty excited wherever we travel, even if it's just traveling from the couch to the fridge. And the food situation on Kiribati has been affected not just by climate change, but the change in diet brought about by relying increasingly on imported food. People are actually forgetting how to use the island's bounty and how to cook with the things that grow there. I keep calling back to Moana, but I just think it's because it's such an interesting counterpoint. It reminded me of the scene in Moana when the people are singing about, you know, the island gives us what we need. They're singing about the coconut. They're talking about weaving nets from the fibers. The water is sweet inside. We use the leaves to build fires. We cook up the meat inside. I wish I could sing that.
In recent years, the diet in Kiribati has changed so much that rates of chronic disease like diabetes have risen dramatically.
So there's a scene with this lovely woman named Tongafidi Cross, and she's determined to reverse these trends. Watching her conduct a cooking class where she's sharing her knowledge of the island's plants and herbs and her old school cooking techniques, it's a beautiful part of the documentary. So one example is the women are learning how to make a traditional squash soup, which in this northern season of pumpkin spice lattes sounds like a delicious alternative.
You can eat every part of the squash, the flower, the stem, the skin, the seeds. When you cut the squash, make sure you don't cut the slices too thickly. Why do we want a lot of herbs in our soup? All these herbs have medicinal properties. Your bodies take in these herbs and you get healthier. You're not just making a meal, you're also making medicine.
It is beautiful how the people are taking care of each other. Like, they're really trying to make good things happen for themselves.
Right, but at the same time, the challenge that they face seem to be never-ending, particularly challenges with the groundwater and how it has come to be often contaminated by salt water.
They show a scene of a community get-together to try to address what can be done to ensure an ongoing supply of fresh water, because so many of the wells are becoming unusable because of the constant flooding from the sea level rise.
Our groundwater used to be fresh and clean. We could drink it. Today it's salty and unpalatable.
The wells near the sea are flooded quite regularly and become spoiled by the salt. If we were to wash with that water, it'd feel like washing in seawater.
So it's not just the need for fresh drinking water. You know the wonderful feeling you have when you get out of the ocean and then you get to rinse off with fresh water? Well, what if you could never have that?
It really opened my eyes because I felt like, oh, okay, so there's some erosion, they're losing land. When you live in a country as big as Canada, you know, what's a couple of feet of coastline? In the documentary, there's a lot of aerial shots. I think they're really effective because, like we mentioned, Kiribati is made up of, I think, something like 33 atolls, and they're super narrow. You lose a foot of land, that's a significant loss. There's nowhere you can back up to because as you back up, you're just going to hit the ocean on the other side of the atoll.
Exactly.
It's a really different headspace to be in than being a Canadian and being you know, most of us live thousands of miles away from coastline.
And the situation is so ever-present and pervasive that even for school children, it's a major part of their schooling and what they're learning about their situation in the world.
The children have drawn pictures to illustrate what they think will happen as a result of global warming. Our beaches will be washed away, this boy says. We're using too much fuel. In this girl's picture, the land is submerged. Everyone, she says, is swimming in the water because the ocean has washed away the land. If sea levels continue to rise, she says, we'll all die. These children are growing up with a palpable fear of the future. This girl tells us her home was flooded just last week. It happened while she was sleeping. Her mother woke her up and carried her out of the house. This girl says she's very scared about climate change. She believes many people are responsible for it, but as a child, there's nothing she can do about it.
You know, when we came up with the idea for Island Watch being a place where we can watch virtually different islands that we want to visit, this show of everything in our season so far really drove home that as much as we want to see islands as places that we can escape, or in the case of the people of Kiribati, see it as their home, even though you're just watching something on a screen, it really felt real.
And the documentary ends on a note of urgency, because this is a very real situation that the people of Kiribati are facing.
The population is set to double on Tarawa over the next 20 years. Climate coordinator Choi Yeeting and the government of Kiribati face a huge challenge.
Unless we find a solution now to address this problem, you know, if we were to top up the land here, sand, and, you know, kind of reclaim it, you know, that may be an option. It requires a period of constant development, and it's very hard to do with the lack of resources that we have. Science tells us we have a timeline. Something that it's very hard to accept right now.
It may be that in just 50 years, Kiribati will no longer exist. It could be the first country to be wiped off the map by climate change.
There's still hope. Very small window of hope, I guess, yeah? Pride is something that'll keep you going. Maybe the end, not yet for Kiribati, yeah? We still have. There still will be a Kiribati.
Let's talk about our Island Watch rating. Dave, how much of an island visit did you feel you got from watching this documentary about Kiribati?
Well, even though the documentary was only 40-some minutes long, it was very thorough and really introduced us and opened our eyes, I think, to the fairly dire situation that this country and its people face. So I would definitely rate this as splashing in the surf. We were right there on the island feeling what they're living every day.
I'm not going to lie, this is not a documentary that's going to have you happy after watching. I know some people will say, oh, that was depressing, but I don't think that's the point. It's not a documentary made to depress us as viewers. I think it's a call to action and to think about what we can do here in our own countries to mitigate climate change, as well as to supporting organizations that are trying to battle these serious situations on islands around the world, because we don't all pitch in to help. There's not going to be these places and these cultures. So that's a long-winded way of saying that I also give this a 5, splashing in the surf, because I think it does a brilliant job, this documentary, showing you the absolute beauty of this place and right up against it how seriously endangered it is. So 5 out of 5 in terms of the island feel. It's real.
And then what about a recommendation as a viewing experience? Would you recommend this documentary to others to watch?
Absolutely. I'd also give it a 5 out of 5 on that. How about you?
I would give it a 4 out of 5. It's an excellent documentary and well worth watching.
It's time for Find the Island. With so many islands in the world, it's a challenge to figure out which to visit. To get to know the islands of the world better, we created this Find the Island segment. It can help choose which islands to visit, either in person or on a future episode of Island Watch. So here's how to play. One of us gives a series of clues about an island, and the other tries to work out what island it is. Best of all, you can play along at home. And this week, it's Dave's turn to highlight an island.
Okay. This island is renowned for its 37 beaches.
That's very precise. That's not going to help me. I feel like whenever I go to a place, I'm not counting the beaches. I'm just trying to find the beaches that best suit me.
Okay. The island was hit hard by Hurricane Irma in 2017, and it caused widespread and significant damage, which was estimated at $3 billion to buildings and infrastructure on the island.
Oh boy, that's right in keeping with our theme today, isn't it? So Hurricane Irma, so I'm guessing this is a Caribbean island, but I still don't know what island it is.
Okay, this might narrow it down a little bit then, because you're right, it is in the Caribbean. There's an international border in the middle of the island.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
Not quite. I'll give you another clue. The two parts of the island are currently associated with countries that are thousands of kilometers away.
Currently associated with? How do you mean?
They have a governance relationship. They're not entirely independent countries. Not the same way that Haiti and Dominican Republic are.
Okay. I am moving my little map focus further south, and I'm thinking... I always get these mixed up. Does it start with a saint, perhaps?
Yes, it does. Okay, I'll give you another clue. Think of a Canadian comedian whose last name is Short, and then I think you might get it.
Like Short? Like it's not... He doesn't have a hyphenated last name? Oh, is Short. Martin Short. Martin Short.
Yes.
Oh!
And so?
So not St. Short, but St. Martin.
Yes, it's the island of St. Martin, which is made up of the collectivity of Saint-Martin, the French portion of the island, and also St. Martin, which is a constituent country of the Kingdom of the Netherlands. So the island is located in the northeastern part of the Caribbean, among the Leeward Islands. It's about 300 kilometers east of Puerto Rico.
Okay. And yeah, it's not a very big island.
No, it's not. It's only about 87 square kilometers in size. The French area is a little more than half, about 53 square kilometers, and the Dutch side is 34 square kilometers. And in that area, the population is about 35,000 people on the French side and 41,000 on the Dutch side.
I wonder how things are going economically, because I would guess that a lot of their economy depends on tourism.
Yes, that's right. In fact, about 85% of the island's workforce are employed in tourism-related jobs. And in recent years, the island received 1 million tourists a year. I mean, it's been a popular cruise ship stopover. There are large resorts and small boutique hotels. And the island is known for things like fusion cuisine, nude beaches, vibrant nightlife, duty-free shops. So it was a very popular destination. And most tourists visit both parts of the island because there aren't usually problems crossing the boundary. But Hurricane Irma hit really hard. You know, it's estimated that 90% of the structures on the island were affected by the storm. Some hotels were completely destroyed.
Wow, and that was only 3 years ago.
Exactly, and I think they were just starting to recover from that. And then, of course, coronavirus hit this year in 2020, which has no doubt had a big impact.
Right.
What I find intriguing about this island is the two international communities in such close proximity. I mean, the island was first shared between the French and the Dutch in 1648, so people have been living side by side for a long time. So I think it would be an interesting place to visit to experience those two cultures on the same island.
Well, Kiribati and San Martin, what a trip! We're headed back on board now, and we're setting sail for Majorca, where we're going to watch the police drama, The Majorca Files. Join us next week for another great Island Watch adventure.
In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at IslandWatchCast. Send us an email at islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to visit our website at islandwatchpodcast.com for show notes and more.
Fair winds, calm seas.
This has been a production of Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League. Phosphine League.